ear, bass on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd Up.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm your host and general manager and guy that just likes to have fun and get a bunch of his friends together, Guilty Wilson, along with me,
Eric Billingsley,
Tim Coker,
and Tim Mattson.
What a gang we have. Tell you what, guys, this has been a blast since you guys have all joined me on this podcast. I've not had so much fun since, well, I guess since we were together 20 years ago in college, sitting in the green room. So, this has been a great podcasting experience, and I'm hoping we can keep it on forever. But in the meantime, let's get on with it. Let's talk about some nerdy things. After all, that's what we do. We talk nerdy. We're going to start it out with some movies.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
We've lined up the top stars from Hollywood and from all over the world to entertain you on our giant screen with the new colorful motion pictures you've been hearing about and reading about.
If you want to enjoy some refreshments, this is your opportunity.
Take me out to the drive-in, far away from the crowds.
Now it's showtime, folks. And you can be sure it's the best show in town. Your continued patronage is very, very welcome.
Movies this time around, we got a few things to talk about. First of all, Fox has greenlit 3 sequels to Avatar. My big question is why? But other than that, it's okay. I mean, it's been 5 years since we saw Pandora, which actually the idea concept was pretty good. It just seemed like it was too long of a movie to me. But there's 3 sequels in the works, and they're going to be shot back to back, and it's starting this fall. So I guess there's still plenty of the planet left to explore. I'm not sure I thought we saw it all, but
I heard it's actually 2 sequels and a prequel.
You're right. It took 14 years from the original conception to release the first Avatar. 14 years. Now we wait 5 years and they're going to film them all back to back. You know, that's kind of shows something there. Whether James Cameron can get away with anything, or maybe he's always had these stories together, I don't know. Zoe Saldana, Sam Worthington, and Stephen Lang, they're all going to reprise their roles in all of the sequels. So that'll be good. Now, there was a rumor, I don't know if you guys heard this, but there was a rumor floating around that Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to be the face of James Cameron's Terminator franchise, that he'd be playing a villain in Avatar 2. So, you know, like, because they knew each other as a villain. Well, Fox has denied those rumors, which I'm glad, because I really don't want to see Schwarzenegger act again. But anyway, he's a...
Me either.
See, I kind of have to disagree with you on this. I think he actually belongs in small supporting parts. Like, he doesn't need to ever anchor another movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, definitely
but
not. Definitely not.
He can learn from Harrison Ford, who knows that he's not a leading man anymore and can take character supporting roles. He could have a career.
Hey, I gotta interject here. When was the last time Harrison Ford made a movie that anybody liked? Nobody should ever take a lesson from Harrison Ford about what to do with his career. Harrison Ford career is a joke. I mean, yeah, he still commands a lot of money, but his every movie he makes is terrible. What was the last movie he was in?
The last Jack Ryan movie he was in was probably the last thing that actually got any real notice.
There's a crystal skulls.
Oh, God,
Did anybody see Ender's Game?
Oh, yeah, I did, actually. I love the movie.
I didn't see it. Oh, really?
Yeah. I was surprised that they actually could put that into a movie. They did. They combined 2 books, Ender's Shadow, or Shadow of Ender, whatever that other book is that follows Bean's life. They took the 2 books and smooshed them together, and that's how they made that movie. But, yeah, and actually, Harrison Ford, he didn't have a huge role because the kid was the focus, but I thought he pulled
point.
It off.
I mean, he's starting to take smaller supporting roles, and he still has a career, you know. It's up to you to judge whether that career is worth watching or not. I'm kind of in Tim Coker's camp. I'm not a big Harrison Ford fan anymore, but at least he's still working in roles that suit his age.
He's still mumbling in roles as soon as age.
That's true, but I mean, Schwarzenegger and Stallone are both still trying to be the stars of their films,
and they're
past their prime. These type of films, they don't belong in the lead role. They belong as the support character.
Well, I got to jump in here and say that I'm not quite ready to let go of the 80s, and I still think that it's possible that Schwarzenegger can reprise his leading man success if he has a decent enough script, okay? Because, I mean, I am a huge fan of the first Conan the Barbarian, which is really the film that launched his career. And, you know, the first two Terminators, awesome films. I mean, the scripts were decent, or decent to very good, depending on which film you're talking about. But, and then a lot of it was crappy, and he was riding off of his success of these other films. I still think that he can recapture that success with the right script. But the question is are any of the scripts that he's signing on for going to fit that bill or not? And that's the big question.
Well, I think, Eric, you're not wanting to get out of the 80s is really proven by the movie you recommended for us this week. So
we'll
talk more about that one later. But I got to tell you, I loved James Cameron's response to the rumor of Schwarzenegger. He said, no, there's no Schwarzenegger-shaped hole in the script. I like that response. So aside from the return of former actors, you know, there's going to be some new casting, of course, where that's all up for grabs. That's going to be, well, basically, it's on the same planet. This time, the rumor has it, or at least the filming, from what it looks like, it's going to be largely underwater. So that'll be interesting as well on the new Avatars.
Know that Sigourney Weaver is supposed to be back at least for one of these films, even though her character died in the first film. And all they will say is that she's not playing the same character. Now, that could mean about anything that you want it to mean at this point, but she is confirmed as coming back at least for one other film.
I have a confession. Uh-huh. I never saw Avatar.
Wow.
Well, here's what happened. Like,
you read my mind. That's what I was going to confess to.
Really? Yep, I thought I was the only one. Yeah.
Never wanted to.
Well, I was interested because I'm a 3D buff, you know? I mean, I take 3D pictures and all that stuff, so it's kind of in my wheelhouse, but I was getting ready. I was planning a big trip over to Germany to see my relatives, you know, during the time it was coming out, and I just didn't have time to go. And then I'm there on the trip, and my aunt, who's like, you know, this German woman in her 60s, is like, oh yes, I saw Avatar. It was very good. Do you want to go? But we never made it. But that would have actually been fun to watch it dubbed into German. But by the time I got back, like, everybody'd already seen it, and nobody felt like going to the 3-hour movie again, so I just never got around to it.
I liked the film, even though it really is Dances with Ewoks. I'm not trying to be facetious. I mean, it really is those two movies combined effect that might be, but it is an amazing 3D film, and that's why it took him 14 years to make this. He wrote the script. This was one of the first scripts that Cameron ever wrote, but he kind of filed it away because he knew they didn't have the technology to make it. Most of that 14 years was developing the 3D technology in which to film it.
It really is
outstanding as a 3D movie. Yes.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful movie. So.
Yeah, but isn't part a big reason why it was shelved for so long, too, is because the script is really pretty simplistic. It's exactly what you said, plus with dashes of Pocahontas over the top.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's absolutely nothing new about the story in this, and that's why I couldn't work up any enthusiasm to go see it, just because it sounds so dull. It sounds like so many movies I've seen before.
Well, I can tell you, Avatar 2 is expected to reach the theaters December 2016, then Avatar 3 2017, Avatar 4 2018, if we all live that long. All right, let's move on to other movies, guys. I got this other one that's really, I think, is going to spark some interest here. Yeah, another group of movies that are going to be made that I think we all are going to have something to say about this. Warner Brothers, you know, they're way behind Marvel Studios. We all know that. I mean, when it comes to making movies of their comic book properties, it seems like DC just hadn't started. But I got some intel that I got from internet blogger Nikki Fink, and I've heard other confirmations of this. I will not reveal my sources, but one person is a Hollywood insider that got showed the script, who happens to be a friend that's going to be in the new movie, and or shown the plan, and he said this is exactly the same plan he's been shown, so it's two different sources have said this. But May 2016, Batman v Superman, you know, Dawn of Justice, that's coming out. We know that one. Well, it looks like July 2016, Shazam. That's cool. I like Shazam. Hey, I got to talk to Jackson Bostwick at the Indie PopCon. We're cool. Christmas 2016, Sandman. Yeah, that's what I thought, too. May 2017, Justice League. All right. July 2017, Wonder Woman. Then Christmas of 2017, they're having a team up with Flash and Green Lantern, and they have said that Ryan Reynolds will not be in the Green Lantern costume.
Oh, damn.
I know. And then finally, May 2018, Man of Steel. Now, there had been talk of Metal Men and Suicide Squad movies for some time in 2016, but that kind of fell off the schedule from what I've understood. If you're wondering why Batman v Superman was delayed, well, it wasn't the script. It wasn't everybody hating Ben Affleck or Jesse Eisenberg, but it's the fact that this it's going to be a launching pad for Justice League, this movie. That's why it's delayed. According to the source, Nikki Fink's source, like Marvel's The Avengers, there will be cameos of superheroes for future installments. The cameos will include the already known Cyborg, Flash. We know they've been cast, Cyborg has. Green Lantern, not by Ryan Reynolds, of course. And Aquaman, who we talked about last week, is going to be in it.
Khal Drogo.
So the Justice League movie is kind of like in the works. They're working on this now. The studio didn't want to move forward until they had all this secure. That's why all the delays and everything. So it looks like they got a plan. What do you guys think?
Okay, I got to jump in here. This script, the Batman versus Superman versus Batman script, which no one has read, at least outside of the studio. We have no idea how good the script even was when it started out. Now they're saying basically we've delayed this because we've gone back and retooled this script to accommodate all these other characters because we're going to turn it into a launching pad for the Justice League. Now, I don't know about anyone, but that doesn't inspire confidence with me. I mean, there's no telling what the quality of this script was to begin with, and given their track record with DC films so far, I'm not all that confident that it was a great script to begin with. But there's anytime you go back to retool a script to accommodate new characters, that just doesn't sound like a recipe for anything good to me.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you guys got something to say, Tim Coker.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, here's the problem I'm going to have I'm obviously don't know how to be optimistic about these movies, first of all. But, like, my issue is that I disagree with the creative direction of this entire project. And that goes back to Man of Steel being such a depressing, crappy movie with amazing action scenes. I'm not going to complain about the action. The super fighting was great. All the punching looked good. But every insight at the core of that movie goes against what I like about Superman and what I want to see in a Superman movie. And it's because the filmmakers think Superman is dumb and dorky, and they want to try to fit in with the cool kids and show, you know, look, guys, we can have him kill Zod with his bare hands. You don't expect that from Superman, and he cries a lot, and he mopes a lot. Like, there are no bright colors in the movie. It's a Superman movie that you can't take kids to because it features mass murder. Like, he breaks a guy's neck on screen, okay? So these are the people that are going to introduce Batman again back into the movie, and he's going to have to be, you know, whatever, Dark Knight on steroids, you know, being grim and revenge-driven, and everybody is going to be. And it really comes down to David Goyer, and he's kind of become my nemesis because I think he's routinely involved in terrible, terrible movies. And he did a podcast recently. Did you guys hear about this?
Oh, man. You're going to kick off on something that really struck a nerve with me. This guy.
Yeah.
This guy.
So this is a guy who makes literally millions of dollars by deciding how these superhero movies are going to be made by DC. And DC has anointed him as essentially the creative director of the entire movie empire they're trying to build. And this guy in a podcast, when asked about She-Hulk, of all things, the Marvel character, launched an incredibly misogynistic rant about how she's just basically a giant green porn star who was invented by sex-starved comic nerds, you know, so that they have, like, porno fodder and it's somebody for the Hulk to have sex with. And then it gets into Martian Manhunter, and he talks about how stupid the whole concept is of Martian Manhunter, and he asks the audience, anybody out there know who this character is? And when the people say yes, he's like, yeah, how many of you have ever had sex? Ha 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 ha. So, you know, therefore revealing his contempt for comic fans anyway. And he talks about how stupid the whole core of the character is, and says, well, first of all, he can't be from Mars because that's stupid. So maybe he's something that they get an alien signal and they grow him in a petri dish in you know, out at Area 51, you know, and then he, like, becomes aware and starts killing people. So basically what he's done is he said he's totally disinterested in this character that he's being paid millions of dollars to develop for a Justice League movie, and he doesn't care about the character and wants to basically throw everything about it out, including the name, and just change it to some totally generic action schlock movie Area 51 junk, and have him start killing people because, you know, that's what makes a good superhero movie, I guess. And this is the guy who is going to be tasked with taking all of this and getting it right. And we've just learned that he doesn't care about getting it right. So, and I'm almost done with my point here because, Tim, I really want to hear what you've got to say. But
oh, man, I'm chomping at the bit to get on this.
When you hear his disdain for Martian Manhunter and then you see that the second movie in their lineup is Shazam. Now, I'm going to say that I'm a big Captain Marvel fan, right? I actually have a 2-year run from the World War II era Captain Marvel comics. Like, I really love this character. So let me tell you about Captain Marvel. He's a little boy, you know, Billy Batson. He's an orphan newsboy, and he gets kind of goes into a subway tunnel and meets this ancient wizard named Shazam, and Shazam gives him the power that if he says the name, he turns into the world's mightiest mortal, and he fights the evil Dr. Savannah, and he has a good buddy named Talkie Tawny, the Talking Tiger, and he's got his sister, Mary Marvel, who's got superpowers, and his sidekick, Captain Marvel Jr. It's all really silly. Now, name anything that I just told you that David Goyer will not immediately reject and replace with something else. What we're going to get is some revenge-driven psycho in a dark maroon suit. You know, he's not going to have the red, gold, and white suit with the cape. He's going to be in this dark maroon suit, and he's going to be acting out poor, abused Billy Batson's hostility and revenge fantasies, or something, because that's what David Goyer thinks is acceptable in a comic book movie.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'll jump in on this, because it feels like you're kind of coming to an end here, but I will tee it off with Shazam. If you think Superman is uncool, holy crap, is Shazam uncool. That is, and I am not a fan of Shazam. I am not like Tim Coker. I don't have comics of Shazam. I used to watch it as part of the Saturday morning thing back in the day, only because it was part of the ISIS show, and I had to sit through that to get to ISIS. Whew, talk about formative years there. Shazam is easily one of the cheesiest of all possible cheesy superheroes. And if they think Superman is just way too weird and, you know, not gritty and modern day enough, I have no idea what they're going to do with Shazam, because he is nowhere near Superman's level of realness. I mean, Superman is William Shakespeare compared to Bazooka Joe when it comes to Shazam.
Well,
and the thing that really gets me is this David Goyer guy. I'm with Tim. They've tasked him with bringing this world to life, and they've pretty much put it all on his plate. And he's just not in touch with this material. He shows, like Tim said, a great contempt for the fans and for the material, and that's the problem with the studio system right now. They do not see these things as valuable, and they are to a lot of people. For us, I'm sure the four of us, a lot of this stuff was part of our formative years. We grew up with comic books. We grew up with Superman and Batman and the Justice League. We have these great memories around these things, and they are not doing them justice, in my mind. I've beat this drum before, but Marvel is so on track with what they're doing. They have built this house for their characters to live in brick by brick. And what DC is doing is they're starting off with the house. They're starting with a finished product in this Batman versus Superman. They're not building it up bit by bit. They're going whole hog right away.
Good analogy.
And it just doesn't make any sense to do it that way. You can't start with a finished product. You have to start with the building blocks of that finished product. And the thing he said about the She-Hulk is just insulting, because she is one of the smartest characters in comics. She's a lawyer. She's very professional. She doesn't dress like a porn star. Throughout most of the modern day series, the one that's currently running, she's dressed as a professional would in a law firm. And it insults that character to say that she is nothing but masturbatory fantasy wank. She's not. And I just don't understand how you can denigrate one of the few decent female characters in comics. There's not enough female characters out there. Why spit on the ones that are there? And how can you possibly, I'm looking at this lineup right now, Batman versus Superman, then Shazam, then Sandman, then Justice League, and then Wonder Woman? How do you do a Shazam film before you do a Wonder Woman film? That is ludicrous.
It boggles the mind, but it's because they're not interested in the characters. Like, these characters, you could make, like, I want to get back to saying they made a Superman movie that I can't take a kid to. What? I mean, it's you might as well say it's a Superman movie that doesn't have Superman in it. I mean, it's just crazy. And these things, like, I know that you think that Shazam, like the Captain Marvel comics, are dumb, but what it is it's very lighthearted stories that are done with an extremely light touch and really very clever and witty, honestly, if you read the original stories. And they could make a family movie, like a real family movie, you know, for people who enjoy sophisticated entertainment. Like, look at The Incredibles, right? That's a superhero movie that satisfies on every level that you can take kids to it.
And it's one of the best superhero films, too.
Right, right. But it requires real sophistication and real commitment to the material. And that's what DC is afraid of, because they are constantly insecure about seeming like kids. And we don't want to be kids. We want to be grown-ups. So we're going to be really brooding, like goth teenagers, and everything sucks, and everything's negative. And, like, I don't want to see... Like, I look at this list of movies, and I think about what a depressing pain in the ass their first Superman movie was, and I don't want to go see that 12 times.
Well, do you remember how they marketed the very first Superman film back in the 70s? Their big tagline was... You will believe a man could fly. It was all about awe and joy, this feeling of flight. That's nothing like what the Man of Steel is.
No, it's so for me, like, if you had told me 10 years ago that they were going to make all these movies, I would have been over the moon. But after what I've seen and after what I know about David Goyer and his attitude towards the material, I would be surprised how many of these movies they get to make, honestly, because I just don't think people are going to keep going to see movie after movie of characters like Shazam that they don't know anything about, but that they go and they get to have a bad time and leave and feel like, oh, wow, life sucks. People are horrible to each other.
Well, you know, other than Nicolas Cage, I think that's the same guy that also ruined Ghost Rider, the Spirit of Vengeance movie. I hated that one.
And, I haven't seen that one.
No, other than Nicolas Cage, I mean, this guy ruined it. Nicolas Cage came in second.
I mean, we've already had DC failures. I mean, Green Lantern was a huge flop.
Ugh.
That was a terrible film. And, I think that some of these are just flat out going to fail. They're just not going to hit at all. Whereas Marvel has shown that even with some of its weaker properties, they can still make a hit.
Yeah. You know, I should at this point own up also and say that with Green Lantern, they were trying to make a kind of fun movie and a lighthearted movie. It's just the tone of it was completely wrong.
Right.
And Ryan Reynolds was wrong. And the alien or the big bad villain was a giant space cloud. You know, like...
Again, they didn't care about the comics. They just wanted to create their own movie, I think, is what was going on there. Because a lot of it was not... It's like, I don't remember it being that way in the comics, so... I think
and that's what used to be good enough. We used to have to put up with that because that's the best you could get with a superhero movie. But we don't need them to go where the mainstream is because the mainstream has come where comics are.
Right.
They don't need to what they need to do is down so that it's more like everything else they're used to making. What they need to do is get used to making these movies.
We went to see the X-Men film this week, and to be honest, I didn't enjoy it as much as what I thought I would because I'm holding things to a higher standard now. Because there was a key moment in the film where Magneto does something just outrageously dumb, and it's totally out of character. He's a genius. He is a master tactician, and he just does something really dumb in service of the story, and I just couldn't, it just threw me out of the film for a good half hour because I kept going over and over in my mind, why the hell would he have done that? That doesn't make any sense.
What was it?
It was when they went, has everybody seen it?
We have, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
It's been in theaters long enough.
Well, they have to go back in time to stop Mystique, and what really set things in motion in the future that ruined everything is they took her DNA and fused it with the Sentinels.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing Magneto does is he's going to blow her head off, leaving DNA everywhere. And as it's shown immediately after the fact, they took blood from this little tiny drop on the pavement and were able to pull her DNA out and know exactly what they needed. So they just needed a little bit more of it to make it happen.
In 1973, sorry.
It was exactly. Oh my God, that's mind-boggling. I mean, this character would know that you don't want to blow her head off and leave blood and brains everywhere. It's, I don't know, man. It just makes me angry when smart characters do dumb things only because because the script needs them to.
And the thing is, that could have easily been written around, like, because you've got Magneto, who has henchmen, although he wasn't in the show, you know, something like Sabretooth, or one of the guys that is under his thumb, who's not too bright, could have gotten the idea, and they could have, you know, tried to kill Mystique, and that would have been totally in keeping with them. But yeah, you're right, Magneto would know better.
That, and can we talk about Peter Dinklage, who is normally a great actor, in this part was so flat. I mean, his part was so underwritten. The way it played in the film, it was like every time anybody ever mentioned mutants, he just popped up. Oh, well, I have this Sentinel program that we've been developing. It's like he's everywhere all at once. Anytime anyone mentions mutants, he just pops up and talks about the Sentinel program.
Nobody expects.
Right.
Nobody expects Peter Dinklage. It just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, well,
but wasn't Blink cool?
Blink was awesome.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Can you imagine playing a game like Portal as Blink?
You know, that's a good idea.
Have you guys played Portal?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
It's fantastic. Okay. I would totally play a game as Blink paired up with a different superhero. You know, like every level, you're paired up with a different hero.
But that's one of the things that I like most about, especially the opening of that film, though, is that they were really using the mutants' powers in combinations that was actually kind of clever and smart. And I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, I love that opening battle sequence.
Yeah. I thought their future X-Men actually showed that they had been working together for some time because they had strategies planned out for things.
Well, bringing this back to DC.
Really well done.
Yeah, bringing this back to DC. So basically, from what I understand, is that the DC guys, they got it wrong from the fact that they're trying to, they're making them dark, okay? I think that's what I'm getting from you guys, is like they're trying to make them dark and gritty and modernize them rather than sticking to the true heart of a comic book character. Am I right there?
Yeah.
Right.
Let me
throw in this one thing before I forget it, because it goes to the heart of what I think the problem is Batman and Superman in this film, like Tim said, they made Superman, you know, brooding and dark and angsty and everything like that, like every other dark and brooding and angsty superhero. They forget the key part of their origin story. Bruce Wayne is a young man who sees his parents, whom he has lived with and loved for several years from all of his life. He sees them gunned down in front of him. That puts him on a specific path. Clark grows up as an infant, not knowing his original parents. The only thing he knows is he has two parents in a loving household who bring him up with strong moral values.
Right,
it's a great family atmosphere. He's happy. You know, he's got like the prototypical middle American childhood. He grows up in Kansas. I mean, this is night and day. Batman and Superman should be night and day opposites. And yet, in this next film, I don't know how they're really going to play against each other when they're both these dark, brooding, angsty heroes. And they shouldn't be. I mean, Clark should be this embodiment of middle America optimism. Now, that would be exciting to see that go up against Batman's brooding, parent-murdered childhood. I mean, that would be something that would be interesting to see. And we're not going to get that because the characters are too similar.
Right.
Yeah, and because they're afraid of sincerity. It's one of the things, like, as many problems as there are with the Richard Donner Superman movies, Christopher Reeve is incredible because of the level of kindness and sincerity he projects while still totally owning that look and the whole thing. And that's why when I saw Winter Soldier, I really felt like Chris Evans has gotten the Christopher Reeve Award from me for playing a totally unironic good guy.
Yes.
And that it's okay to make a movie about a totally unironic good guy because it's about him making the choices to do what's right no matter what. And that's what Superman should be about.
Yeah, I mean,
not to jump back on the Marvel bandwagon again, because we keep going back to that well, but I mean, in Winter Soldier, I mean, you've got a totally unironic good guy. And yes, I totally agree 100% with the comparison with Christopher Reeve, but it's in the quote unquote real world that you can take a character and not sell them out and not compromise the basis of who they are and still put them in real world situations and still, you know, show that it's a dark, cynical world around them, but it doesn't affect who they are. And you get to see how they react to that environment. And another thing I want to say about the original Superman movies, because it's they've become kind of a joke, you know, in some circles. And I still dearly love at least the first two movies. The third and the fourth one are terrible. But yes, okay, maybe they're a little too jokey.
But okay. What did you say, that they're a little too jokey?
Yes, I think that maybe they are a little too jokey at times, but it's not. It doesn't. Yeah. It's not a deal breaker. It serves the purpose in making it a lighter film and making the fact that the Christopher Reeve Superman is effortlessly moral. I mean, he just is. He's not cheesy. He's not goofy. That's just who he is. And I don't understand why that's such a hard concept for DC or Warner Brothers to get their heads around.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, superhero is a compound word, and they're only focusing on half of it. Mm. They're focusing on the super aspect, and they're forgetting the hero. These people should be heroes to people. Captain yeah. America is a legit hero, and Chris Evans does, I think, like you said, he does the Christopher Reeve work on this, because he does take a character that is highly moral, is guided by an internal moral compass that is rock solid. And that, you know, that allows you to comment on our modern society. When you bring someone like that into our modern world,
yep.
well, they're not going to see it the same way we see it. Where we see all these shades of gray, they may see things in a little bit more black and white.
Yeah, they shouldn't be afraid of that.
No, they shouldn't be. Yeah, and you know where this all, for me, the DC superhero bandwagon kind of came off the rails was back in the Superman Returns era, when Perry White said something about Superman standing for truth, justice, and all that, instead of saying, going all out and saying he stands for truth, justice, and the American way.
Yeah.
Like, is the right. traditional way of saying what Superman stands for. They wussed out and left off
yeah.
the American way. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, America, rah, rah, we're the best, but it is kind of what Superman does stand for, and that's why he's a hero. He does try to take the high ground. He does try to take a more peaceful way out, if that's available to him.
You know, Tim, it's interesting that you bring up the truth, justice, and the American way thing, especially in light of our Captain America conversation, because I read an interesting article that pointed out something surprising, which is that Captain America Winter Soldier was a huge hit in China, of all places.
Wow.
And when they did some research to find out what it was people liked about the movie, they felt that the Captain America character embodied the idea of America that they love versus the vision of America, you know, of drone attacks and domestic surveillance and all that, that they don't like.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting that in that movie they have Steve Rogers stand unapologetically for what's right. And Superman can do that. You know, it doesn't have to be about him sad. You know, yeah, there's plenty you can do with the character. And by the way, I can do 20 minutes on Superman Returns easy, so we'll have to table that one.
I gotta say, for me, that moment, that Perry White quote, that says more about us than it does about Superman. I think it says more about yeah. America than it does about Superman, because we don't really take the way that Superman is traditionally standing for, in my opinion. Now, that's just my opinion. I think we don't. The American way is no longer what it once was.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Well, it's certainly a lot more complicated, but it's. I don't know. I just feel like they could stand for something interesting, and they just aren't. They don't care. You know, they just don't care. David Goyer, you know, to him, this is nothing different than writing, I don't know, the next movie for Sylvester Stallone to, I don't know, maybe jump a bus off of the Washington Monument so that it hits an airplane or something. You know, like, he does it.
It's really frustrating. Yeah. I think everybody can tell that the four of us are really frustrated by the state of affairs on DC's front, because I don't know about you guys, but I'm fully prepared to love a DC movie. I don't like ragging on them week in and week out. I want to praise them for something, and they're just really not giving me any opportunity to do that.
Okay, is David Goyer going to be writing all of the DC superhero movies?
Well, so far on IMDb, they just have him listed as, of course, the Batman v. Superman, or whatever, Superman v. Batman, whichever order that is. Anyway, and Justice League.
I guarantee you, if he's not writing them, he'll be part of the rewriting team for everyone.
Well, he's fulfilling the same role, I think, or similar, that Joss Whedon is for Marvel Studios, where he's not just directing the Avengers pictures, but he's also providing creative guidance across the board, you know, and occasionally, you know, doing little rewrites on this scene or that, like he did on Thor: The Dark World.
Okay, in all this discussion, one of the movies that we haven't really covered is the Sandman movie, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm a big fan of the old run back in the day, so Tim Coker, what do you think of the possibilities of them doing a decent Sandman movie?
Well, I want to believe, you know, as old Fox Mulder used to say. I think that if you want somebody who's going to get it, David Goyer's not the one. It's a shame that they don't have... Well, actually, let's rewind a little bit, because I think that if David Goyer is involved, this movie's chances of being anything other than kind of just boilerplate horror movie are pretty much vanishingly slim. But Guillermo del Toro,
yes.
I always have a hard time getting his first name out, but Guillermo del Toro has talked about the fact that he is evidently tasked with making sort of spearheading movies for Warner Brothers about DC's Vertigo line of characters, right? Including Justice League Dark, which is the dumbest name ever because, you know, is it also accompanied by Justice League Dry, Lady Justice League, you know, and what is
Diet
it?
Justice League.
Diet Justice League. And yeah.
It's got Plastic Man in it.
Justice League Genuine Draft. But, but, you know, Justice League Dark is like the supernatural team, right? So it's got Hellblazer in it. It's got,
yeah, Brandon talked about that
you
last
know, Swamp
week.
Thing, and I don't know.
It's well, easily one yeah. of the worst Justice League titles ever.
Oh my God!
Have you read it?
No. It's not really my thing. I like the characters, but I don't need to watch them team up.
Well, yeah, don't do it. It's a mistake.
But the point is, like he talked about, but Del Toro has talked about being consulted by or being brought in by DC to sort of oversee film versions of the Vertigo characters, and that would include Sandman. So what I'm hoping is that Sandman is not part of the Goyer universe and is instead maybe going to be under Del Toro, who I think would have... He has just so much more of a poetic sensibility that I think he has a decent chance of getting what's beautiful about the Sandman comics to survive.
I guarantee you that within the next year and a half, you'll see a news report of him departing the property.
Yeah, that's okay. You're right.
He leaves a lot of projects.
Guaranteed yeah. that he will be out of this before too long.
Well, let me ask you.
They won't keep their hands out of the pot. They won't let him do what he wants.
Right.
Well, right.
Here's an idea. Gaiman has written several screenplays. I think he may have even directed Mirror Mask. How about having Gaiman do his own screen adaptation of his character?
That wouldn't be unusual. I mean, wouldn't?
I'm sure they'll start off with something like that, but then they'll hand it off to five or six script doctors to punch it up.
Well, let me ask you this. It was
guaranteed. That's just the problem with Hollywood right now. That's not just comic books. That's Hollywood in general.
Well, is right. Hellblazer part of the Vertigo?
I think so.
Because yeah. David Goyer is going to be writing for Constantine, the series, this fall.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if he's going to be incorporating that with the Sandman. They got to keep those separate from the regular DC.
Well, now I'm gonna play devil's advocate here for a second and say that I love the first Blade movie, and that's a Goyer written film. Goyer, not everything that he does is bad, at least in my opinion. Although I agree with everything that's been said here about the Superman movie. So you know, as far as his, I think in his wheelhouse and his area of expertise, that he can excel, he can actually be good, and I'm hoping that the Constantine series, because the trailer looks damn good.
Yeah,
I'm really holding out hopes that this is going to be something fun and unique and interesting to watch. But you know, only time will tell. But just to jump back in on the Gaiman thing, I love Neil Gaiman's writing. I've read probably three or four of his books. The man is, in my opinion, he's almost, I'm not going to put him on the same level, but he's almost like a younger Douglas Adams, in that he just gets these ironic things about the absurdity of humankind, and he writes about it beautifully. And I so want him to do the screenplay that adapts his own material, because I don't think anyone else can do it justice.
I think it's just not going to happen, unfortunately. I don't think that'll ever happen.
Well, now I'm looking up, trying to find some information on the Sandman movie. It looks like Joseph Gordon-Levitt is going to have a hand in it somehow. I've read somewhere that he's going to have a hand in a couple of the Justice League movies. Plus, I think he's going to be bringing back his role, if not as Robin, but at least maybe Nightwing. Because, you know, in that last Batman movie, he showed up as Robin. But, yeah, he's got his hand in a couple of these things, so I don't know. But, yeah, it looks like he's going to have something to do with the Sandman movie.
I hope it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I would like to be optimistic about anything DC related, but because I love these characters. I love Superman. I love Batman. I don't want to be down on them, but I just am.
Well, they haven't given us much to go elsewhere with it.
Yeah. So, all right.
Okay. How about if we move from stuff that we hate to something I think we can all agree that we love?
Yeah. So the two Tims saw How to Train Your Dragon. Now this ought to be interesting. Well, I want to hear both you guys' opinions on this movie.
Okay. Well, about an iStart. I really liked it. I saw the first movie when it was in the theaters, and I thought it was good and really a pleasant surprise, because when I think of a DreamWorks animated movie, I kind of imagine a lot of groin injury jokes and pop culture references, and I don't remember the movie, you know? And what I liked about this movie, the first one, was that it didn't have any of the characteristics that I dislike from DreamWorks animated movies. It was great. Now, the specifics of the movie I don't remember too well, which is great because it means I get to rent the Blu-ray and watch it again. But this movie I just loved. I just really loved it. I have like one little quibble with the whole movie, and I won't even get into it, because everything that they did, I thought they pulled off beautifully. And the thing that really struck me was, like, A, that I really appreciated their vision of going in and having Hiccup and the gang be older and not be as young as they were in the first movie. I liked the idea that time had passed. I thought that was a pretty good choice to make, because it made things feel a little fresher. And I really, you know, I didn't think I was going to like having him show up. I'm sure it's a little trite, but yeah, I'm watching a movie about dragons, you know. I thought she was great. I thought all the voice actors were terrific. It was a spectacular looking movie. And the big surprise to me was it felt very indebted to Miyazaki, which really surprised me. I think a lot of the flying scenes had his DNA in them. And when you see, there's a scene where Hiccup is up above the clouds, and this other dragon rider shows up in this really cool mask with a staff riding on this really badass looking dragon. And for people who haven't seen the movie, I don't want to spoil what's going on here, but that scene was right out of the Miyazaki playbook. And the thing that was the most reminiscent of Miyazaki for me was Hiccup's absolute conviction of what was the right thing to do, and his being on the side of right, on the side of peace and understanding. And that's all he wants to do is get just a second with the bad guy to make him understand. And I thought that that was just beautiful. And the way he does it and the way the story plays out was very much like a Miyazaki movie. And for me, that is huge praise.
Yeah, I hadn't really put that together in seeing it until you mentioned Miyazaki. I had to really go back and rethink about that movie, rethink what I thought about that movie, because I totally agree. The flying scenes in particular, there was a real joy to flight. Man, did that come across in this film.
Yeah.
I know that it had been a while since I've seen the original, so I was a little rusty on my lore for this film, but I have to say, it's something to be said that an animated film aimed at children really made me cry on numerous occasions. It was very moving. And,
yeah.
You know, it's entertainment that doesn't talk down to the kids. It plays out in a way that is really engaging. The characters are fun to spend time with, and there aren't any fart jokes.
Right.
I mean, there are no fart jokes in this thing. And the funny thing is, we sat through the trailers before this were two different movies that were nothing but stupid humor and fart jokes aimed at kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just makes me despair. The state of entertainment for children is just, it's not very good in a lot of movies. And this movie is a great movie to take your family to. I loved it, if you can't tell. I just really loved it. And they didn't spend a lot of excess time with the comic relief characters. They had these comic relief characters. They were there. They were part of the film. But they didn't interrupt the flow of the story. The only thing that I could criticize it is that I felt that the villain was a little bit underwritten and lacked...
Just a bit.
Lacked solid motivation. I'd like to see what motivated him, you know, what made him become who he was.
I agree.
That would have taken time away from Hiccup and his family. And I got to say, I wanted to spend as much time as possible with him.
Yeah. That was beautifully put, Tim. That really captures what's special about this movie. It's like a Pixar level movie. I thought it was great.
Oh, I think it's really up there with some of the finest in Pixar entertainment. Because, like you said, this is a character that genuinely believes in what he does. His motivations come from his heart. He thinks the best of people, and he thinks the best of the world around him. And he's a firm believer in his convictions, and he plays that out all the way to the end. And there's something beautiful about that, someone who is firm in their convictions and someone who has a good handle on his moral compass. He knows what's right and wrong to him, and he's willing to go to bat for that. And that means a lot. Standing up for your convictions is something that's important for kids to learn. And I feel that this has it in spades.
You know, I didn't expect that kind of response from you guys on this type of a movie, on this movie in particular. You know, I thought, well, first of all, I wanted to go see the movie. I like to watch animated films and I wanted to go see this, but Isaac, you know, he said, nah, no interest. So I didn't ever get to go. Now that I'm hearing this, I'm like thinking, I might just have to go by myself now, so because this might be worthwhile. I mean, it is showing here at the Eagle Theater in town, and I just might have to go see it myself.
You'll do yourself a favor. Just go tonight and go see it. Just do it, because I guarantee you it'll improve your night immeasurably.
Well, if I can promise Isaac, I'll buy his popcorn. Maybe he'll go.
I think the two of you will love it. It's a great, you know, family film. I watched it with my kids, and it really enhanced the experience to be there with them, because it has a lot to say about what a family is and what a relationship between a parent and a child is.
Yeah,
and I got to say, I spent a lot of time, and this is just purely on a technical level. The animation is so amazingly top-notch. Whatever rendering program they're using, the hair is unbelievable. It is really, it's funny to say that, and I feel like I sound kind of dumb saying that I spent so much time looking at Hiccup's father's hair, his mustache and beard and hair. It's amazing. Holy cow.
Well,
and there's a close-up on his hand when he reaches out to something, and just the level of detail in the skin tone and texture, man, that is amazing work.
Huh.
The animators deserve high praise for that, because they really went above and beyond. They created some beautiful animation.
I smell Oscar.
Did you see it in 3D?
No, I'm strictly in the anti-3D camp.
Got it. Well, the 3D is spectacular for folks who aren't allergic to it. It's really good.
I could see how it could add to the experience, because the flying scenes alone, I'm sure the depth of field that 3D would add could actually enhance the experience.
You know, this kind of reminds me of the Lego movie. I mean, that was another one that's a complete surprise. I mean, I know when I went into that movie, I just expected, you know, sit back, just going to be a bunch of silliness. And I ended up walking out of the theater saying, wow, that was a great story. That's a great everything about that movie. So it's sounding like production houses, they're actually getting it, saying, hey, we need to put more of the story than just a bunch of silly antics into a cartoon. So
yeah, I'm dying to see that. I didn't get to see it in the theater.
Lego movie?
Yeah.
You're going to be totally surprised, I'm telling you.
Yeah, same here. I'm waiting for that to come to Netflix or something so I can see it.
Well, I know it's on demand right now, because it's advertised like crazy on my cable. Huh. So, but
guys, I got to tell you, you will melt. Mm-hmm. This film will absolutely melt your heart. The Lego movie, I have to agree, was great. This film is just a couple steps above that. The artistry behind it is really evident.
Hmm.
Well, and, you know, it gets back to our discussion earlier about the DC Comics movies and the kind of cynicism that does not allow anything to be fun. Like there's a joke at the end of the Man of Steel movie that is so jarring, because there hasn't been anything to laugh at in the entire movie all the way through. And they're just afraid of sincerity. And this movie unapologetically embraces its positive idea heroically. You know, I mean, Hiccup is heroic in a way that Superman in that movie couldn't even dream of. And if you can't make a Superman movie where he's more heroic than a kid in the Dragon movie, then you have totally failed. And that's why this movie is so special, is because I think people need to be rewarded for not being cynical when they make their movies, and for trusting the audience to go along on something that doesn't try to pretend to be sophisticated by being pessimistic.
One of the beauties of that is that Hiccup does believe the best in people. But when push comes to shove, and when it's clear that he is not going to be able to accomplish things the way he thought he was going to be able to, he's willing to back up his convictions with more heavier-handed tactics, but he doesn't resort to those tactics right away.
Does he snap the bad guy's neck?
You know what? I think in a more adult version of this, I think he would be capable of that.
Yeah.
But that would be totally earned.
All right. Well, you've convinced me. I got to get Isaac away from this Steam weekend sale anyway. So there's my way to get him out of there. I'm going to get him over to the theater. We're going to go see this. I just have to now. This sometime this weekend. So you guys convinced me. I was surprised. So.
Woo-hoo.
I'm glad to hear that from you guys. All right.
If I was there, I'd go with you and see it again.
Wow. Okay.
I would too.
All right. right, all right, I'm gone. Well, not yet. I got to do a podcast thing first. Eric Billingsley, our 80s stuck in, how would you describe yourself, Eric? The stuck in the 80s, man. But anyway, Eric recommended a movie we all get together, or well, not get together, but separately watch and talk about. It's, you know, kind of like Facebook. Everybody, nobody's together. They're all in different places and talk about all sorts of stuff anyway. But we watched the movie The Hidden. Kyle MacLachlan and Claudia Christian.
Michael, yeah, Michael Nouri from Flashdance.
Oh, yeah, he was in there, too. Oh, yeah, that's right. That was what he was in.
It's the only thing I can know that he, that yeah. I know he's in.
Yeah.
I know he just wrapped this. I know he just wrapped a sequel to Easy Rider, if you can imagine that.
Oh, wow.
What?
Oh, believe me, that's a podcast in and of itself.
It might be. But also Danny Trejo. Hey, Machete was in there. I'm like, that was awesome.
If you blink,
that
you miss
was
it.
Funny.
Yeah. That was him?
Yes.
Yes.
Was
oh,
him.
My God. I thought, wow, that guy looks like Danny Trejo, but he can't be in this.
Oh, hey.
Yep, it was.
That's probably one of his first roles, because that's all he did for the longest time was play a prisoner in some sort. So, but yeah, just an amazing cast. You look at all these people back in 1987, and it's, a lot of them have done a few things. I kept noticing faces left and right that I'd seen in other things. I'm like, wow, you know, I've seen them in this. But it was very, it was an interesting movie. But so we all watched
Lynn Shay from the Farrelly Brothers movies. She had a fairly big part. She was the PR person for the candidate.
Yeah, the one that they could have done more with her at the end, but I'll talk about that later. Anyway, Eric, you give us the synopsis of the movie before we each go into our own separate reviews. And after you give the synopsis, I'll start out because I'm not as critical, cynical, or anything else like that. I just kind of had a fun time with it, so I'll have mine will be short and sweet, and then I'll let you guys talk about yours.
I don't know who you're talking about.
So, Eric, give us a little synopsis, and then I'll start out with my review.
All right. Well, the gimmick or the premise behind the Hidden, it's first of all, it's a fairly low budget B movie when they still actually made B movies that released to the theaters. And the premise is there's this intergalactic alien that can jump from body to body, and he's basically a criminal. If you think of a criminal as someone who like a car thief that will, you know, drives with impunity because they don't care how bad they trash it, because they'll just jump into another car and steal that one, then you get kind of the premise behind this criminal. But he goes from planet to planet wreaking havoc, and there's another alien who apparently is of the same race, but when you see him, he looks completely different, and that we'll get into that later. He's been tracking him down. I guess he's an intergalactic cop of sorts. And they both come to Earth, and it's basically, you know, a cops and robbers story with a twist. And it's also a buddy cop movie, an action film, and it's got a sense of humor as well, and very much a fish out of water story. But that's the basic premise.
And with Kyle MacLachlan playing an FBI agent in the film, I was thinking throughout the whole thing, where's the red room? And, you know, hey, Coop, where are you? But it didn't happen that way. Because I thought it was a prequel to Twin Peaks, for sure. But anyway, I tell you what, I was totally surprised, Eric. When it first started out and the guy robs the bank at the beginning scene and he's taken off and you hear that 80s hair band metal. But later the music got better, by the way. I'll talk about that in a second. But when you hear that, I'm like, oh, my God, what am I in for? And, you know, I thought, this is going to be a cheesy 80s, but it surprised me. As I was watching the movie, I'm like, this is kind of a cool idea. So the body jumping thing, you know, tracking down the cop from outer space, tracking down the villain from outer space, and they happen to be on Earth, had a lot of great ideas to it, and it wasn't really that bad for its time. Again, there's like so many celebrities from, you know, from the 80s that have, you know, are still acting today that make their appearance that just amazed me on that aspect of it. Almost took me out of the film, though, but then I had to realize, I know I'm watching this film, not watching their careers. You had the whole, like you said, the buddy cop film aspect of it. I liked that, although there were a couple moments where I totally expected to hear Axel F. being played in the background. Exactly. I'm like,
I kind of think it might have been in a couple scenes, it seems like.
There was a scene when the guy stole the Ferrari from the dealership and he took off. It almost sounded like that's what the song was that was going to start. And I'm like, oh, no, okay. But I will tell you, the one thing I loved about it was the fact that they had Concrete Blonde and Lords of the New Church as the soundtrack. I thought, I mean, it was basically started out like an 80s hair metal band in that first song, and then it later It was like kind of like a new wave punk of the 80s that we had, and I like that. I've always been a fan of that type of music, and that was treated throughout the whole soundtrack really cool.
Tie this back into what we were talking about earlier in the record store.
Yes.
You could almost do the same thing as we did with Cabin in the Woods. Spot the Easter eggs, all those posters.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and the IRS record label poster.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
A lot of the artists on the soundtrack were from the IRS label, so great product placement there. they also had the whole stealing of the cassettes. It's like, wow. The cassettes, that used to be a thing. I forgot.
Oh my God.
But the Buddy Cop film, when the FBI agent was teamed up with the detective to help track down the murder, and they ended up, oh, we got to find this person now, because when he jumps from body to body, and he had to explain that, and he goes, you're not telling me a lot. And he says, no, I'm not. And then they just go on to the next victim. I thought that was interesting, but I think they could, I guess if it were filmed today, they would have actually... He would have said, okay, look, I'm an alien from another planet. Here's what we need to do. But they didn't. And I think that kind of actually kept the story going, because you still had, when's he going to tell him? You know? And I also expected the little girl to be an alien, but I don't know. Let's see, one other feature of it, the
I kind of think she was.
I think, yeah.
I think the actress might have been, actually.
Maybe. when it built into the plot of taking over the senator's body, running for president, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a sequel coming. And I thought they really could have played on that, but, you know. But no, they really did good. The special effects, I read a funny thing about it on the side, where they actually had to do stop motion photography for the alien transforming the body, or transferring into a different body, because the way they had to stuff this bug looking creature into the mouth of a human looking mold, and they had to do it by stop motion photography, and I'm like, wow, I didn't even catch that. It didn't look like
that. I didn't either.
So
that was one of the grossest things ever.
It was pretty interesting to see a bug crawling from body to body. But no, Eric, good. I thought it was a good movie. Fun. Again, you have to take it for its time. 1987. They didn't have, it wasn't a high budget movie anyway, but they didn't have the great special effects, and apparently they didn't have all the great writers, but they had enough to make it keep me interested through the movie. In other words, I enough of the plot was like, hey, this is pretty interesting. And plus, they had Claudia Christian show off her rear end in a really cool dress. So,
mm-hmm.
But
that was some really awkward stripping.
Yeah, I thought so, too. It's like those people.
That was some super awkward stripping.
I've been in a few strip bars that like that, though. So.
Well, I've heard that's how they work. I've never actually been to one.
This was back in my Navy days. Anyway, but yeah, that's what I mean. I thought it was surprisingly good. Again, if anybody watches it, The Hidden, with Kyle MacLachlan. Consider it for when it was filmed and for what it was at the time. So, I mean, it was fun for what it was. Today, they'd have to do a lot more work to get it up to standard. But anyway, I want to hear from you guys now.
Well, I'll go and jump in and give my opinion, since I was the one that suggested this film, movie, whatever you want to call it. I saw this.
What made you suggest it? I'm just curious.
I don't know. It popped into my head. I do not know why it popped into my head, but I was like, you know, I'm always, you know, kind of searching my head for things to suggest for us to watch, and this one came up that I was like, okay, because I'm looking for something that I think maybe not all of us have seen, so, you know, and something that I enjoyed watching, and this is something that I saw at the theater when it opened, and I it just left a very strong impression on me. And even over the years, even though as dated as it is, it's managed to stand up, in my opinion. What I like about it, okay, it's probably not the first body jumping alien movie to be made, although other than like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which doesn't really quite qualify, I can't really think of anything offhand. But even if it's not the first movie to do this concept, it does it in a unique and original way. And the way that it combines these movie tropes and genres together, you know, the buddy cop movie, the action film, it's also got a lot of humor in it, although some of it's a little too on the nose. And if I have one major complaint about the movie, it's that a lot of it is too on the nose. I think that's a fault of the writing and of the directing, that there could have been a little more subtlety and a little less, you know, straightforward, you know, here's the joke type presentation probably would have been a little better. But it's not a deal breaker. It's not a huge portion of the film. I I don't know. The pace of the film is really well done. I like a lot of the actors that are in it, even though some of them I can't remember their names, but I recognize almost all of them from, you know, other 80s films. And some of them, a few of them, have managed to maintain careers even to today's date. Well, like the first, the guy that's the alien is in at the beginning of the film who robs the bank. That's Chris Mulkey, who would later be in Twin Peaks with Kyle MacLachlan.
Yep.
It's funny because this does predate Agent Dale Cooper, but there are certain big shades of Dale Cooper in this character.
Well, it explains a lot of the actions Dale Cooper took in Twin Peaks, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kyle MacLachlan definitely took a lot of what he brought to this character and brought it to Dale Cooper, and they're both otherworldly characters. I mean, so it makes sense in that regard. But I really love the way that Kyle MacLachlan played this character. I mean, just I never once doubted who this character was, and that he was, you know, new to this earth. But it wasn't always, I mean, there was a couple of obvious, you know, references or whatever, but it was, he made it his own. And I really, the dinner scene was, you know, I don't know, goofy and kind of touching at the same time.
That was one of the weirdest things. I felt like the editor had just kind of fallen asleep and cut that just at random. That scene in particular just really jumped out at me because that whole thing with him at their house was just so strangely edited and put together.
I kept wanting to hear Angelo Badalamenti music in the background on that scene right there.
Yeah,
it was odd, but I kind of enjoyed that oddness. I also really enjoyed the actor who with the bug eyes who played the alien infested guy through most of the film, the guy with the heart condition and the stomach problems.
Oh yeah,
his was great. His performance was by far the best in the movie.
It was awesome. I have to say, little things, because as an actor, I noticed these things. Just little things that might escape most other people. I was like, wow, that, you know, he's really putting his all into this character. And I mean, and just his reactions and when he's injured, the way that he just uses the duct tape to patch up his wound, the way that he says hi or bye whenever he's getting ready to kill someone.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I can understand why people might not get into the film, but I know that there are other friends of mine that feel as fondly for the film as I do. But I'll go ahead and leave it at that and let you guys.
Before anybody else says anything here, I got to say something. There was one subtlety throughout that I loved, and it's throughout the whole film. And I didn't catch it until the second guy around, but then I looked back and I watched the first part again. But every time the bug was in the body, the tongue action, the way they would do the tongue, sniffing the air with their tongue, even the dog. I mean, it was just, that was like a very subtle thing in there that I thought, that's clever.
Yeah, it was. It was very consistent, and I like that. Was, I guess you could probably attribute that to the director, but it was very consistent across, even with the dog, like you said. I did want to say one other thing, too, and this probably bothered me more than anything else in the film, and that is, when you finally see the good alien, he's like this gold sparkly dust and looks, I don't
know. Yeah.
They're supposed to be the same, from the same planet, but one of them looks like a huge, disgusting, mucus-covered bug, and the other one looks like gold dust. So, I mean, I understand thematically why they did that, but it was just, it always leaves me scratching my head.
I'm not convinced they're the same race.
Same here. I was thinking at some point they kind of explained that they weren't, too. I can't remember the lines.
I kind of feel like there's more to this film on the editing room floor.
Mm.
It would really flesh this film out and make it a little bit more
easy
to understand. I kind of feel like there's a lot left out of this film.
I was deeply skeptical about this movie, but I was grateful for the chance to see it because I'd never seen it back in the day. And I was very deeply skeptical about it. And honestly, I kind of loved it. I was surprised because maybe it was because my expectations were so low, but I thought it was a solid movie. And I can't disagree with any criticisms you guys have made, but basically I just really enjoyed it. I thought that the way the bad guy was done, I loved that he didn't have some dumb plan to take over the Earth or turn us all into him or whatever. It was just a straight up 80s like conspicuous consumerism fantasy gone wild, where he wanted to do was just gorge, you know, and he takes the tapes he wants, and he takes the boombox, and he kills the dude, and he goes to the restaurant, he's shoveling the food in while he's playing that music really loud. Like, And then he sees the car he wants, and he just straight up gets up and runs after it. Like, I loved it. He was fantastic. But all the way through it, then, he takes over Claudia Christian. And I've got to say, yeah, that was like, that was the kind of strip routine that you would, as beautiful as she is, that you would kind of clap politely, you know, and tip with kind of an apologetic look on your face, you know?
Golf clap.
It's kind of the equivalent of walking into the shower room when your aunt's taking a shower. it's kind of sexy.
Yeah. It was kind of like that Charlie commercial that Cindy Crawford did that they aired for like a day before people mocked it and they took it off, where she was singing and dancing. Yeah. So okay, but I do not want to harp on Claudia Christian, because she, I thought, was good in her scenes in the movie, and I, especially when she's taken over and she goes out there, and again, you just see this creature being led around by its id, you know, just looking for whatever. And so it picks up this dude in the street and wants his car, so she has sex with him. Because that's an experience too, and like, she takes the whole thing, and I just really enjoyed it. I thought that was great. Great is a strong word, but
oh yeah, that's a little high praise there.
But I thought it was fun. I thought Kyle MacLachlan, who again, I'm a little conflicted because I love Twin Peaks and all that, and I loved Blue Velvet, but I've had a hard time really getting into watching him in a lot of things. And I thought he was very credible as this sort of fish out of water. As weird as you thought the home visit scene was, I actually really enjoyed it. I felt like it was strangely disjointed, and everything felt kind of off. And that long of him and the daughter staring at each other, I thought that was creative, and I really liked how they did that myself. It kind of put me off too. I guess my only problem with the movie is that I felt like there was a protagonist-shaped hole in the middle, because I thought Michael Norrie was just, he was like eating cottage cheese on a stick of celery. You know what I mean? The Ned Flanders, what is it? Cottage cheese on cucumber slices, the Ned Flanders nachos, you know? that's what Michael Norrie is in this movie. He is so, like, just the hard-boiled cop from Central Casting. And what if it had been Kurt Russell, you know?
Yeah. Like,
this movie would have been on a whole other level. But I thought that the soundtrack was kicking, and I love the big car chase. And, you know, so many movies now are self-serious, and I liked how this was fun. Like, it made me think of, and I would never put this on the level with RoboCop, because the original RoboCop is a brilliant piece of social satire, completely hilarious, right? Blah, blah, blah. It's art. But it's also fun, and that's the difference. The new RoboCop was okay, and it was... You know, it was a social satire too, but it was so serious. It was so afraid to be fun, you know, and I feel like this movie was just unabashed fun. I really like that about it. And, you know, what's not to like at the end when the guy, like you said, you see his true form and he's the beautiful, sparkly angel. It's so corny, but it's unapologetic. And that's why I feel like it's not a great movie, but it's a diamond in the rough. Like it has a lot of reward. For me, it had a lot of rewards in it.
Good.
And I'm very, very grateful to you, Eric, for recommending it.
Well,
thank you.
Before Tim Mattson gives his review here, I do want to pass along another bit of, I don't know if you guys, I just had to find out everything I could about this film after I watched it, because I'm with you, Tim. I had a lot of fun watching it. It was a fun film, that's for sure. And I really, really, I don't have a complaint with it, because it was entertaining throughout. Little factoid here about Claudia Christian, when she says that in an interview later on that there was a scene where she shot the gun and a piece of somehow the prop gun cut her cornea, scratched her cornea really bad. And she says that is why in every Babylon 5 scene where she shoots a gun, you will see her turning her head before she shoots it, even though those prop guns weren't working. She says that's the reason why, is that film, The Hidden, cut her cornea, and she flinches around guns ever since.
Wow.
Mm.
Gun shy.
Yep, fun little factoid. Wow. All right, Tim Mattson. Lay it on us.
I gotta say, and I'm gonna preface everything I'm about to say with this statement. I enjoyed watching this film, and I did have a good time with it. Having said that, I would say this film, if this film was a player on a major league ball team, it would be the middle reliever. It's not gonna be a star. It's not gonna be anything flashy. It's just good, solid journeyman work. You're never going to be the star of the team, but you are going to be a contributor. And for me, that's what this film was, because it's a good, solid 80s film. And it is definitely of the time period, because this film is not something that would be made now or before. I mean, it really is very much of its time period. When I was watching this, I kind of felt like it was Hal McLaughlin starring as a concussed toddler and Michael Nuri starring as the ghost of Mel Gibson from Lethal Weapon. And then everybody else, you could have picked that entire cast up and just dropped them into any 80s crime film. Mm-hmm. They were pretty much the stock type of character that you see in the background of every 80s cop drama or comedy. And that's not a criticism. That's just that they hit it just so on the nose. I agree with that criticism from Tim, is that this movie is just a little too on the nose. It doesn't really have much to say about consumerism. It shows it, but it doesn't really say much about it.
Even the cocaine in the Ferrari dealership?
That was awesome!
Man, yeah. Holy cow. That is super 80s right there. But yeah, some of the performances were really entertaining. Pretty much anyone that the alien was in, I thought, did really solid work as performers. I'm like Eric. I like to watch actors work. And you could tell they put a lot into that, especially the bug-eyed dude. I'm sorry, I feel bad for not knowing the guy's name, but the guy with the heart condition, he really was fascinating to watch. And honestly, I would have preferred if he was in more of the movie, because I really liked his work and I liked what he was doing with that character. But I don't know that I'd ever watch this again. But I am grateful to you for putting it in front of us, because I had never heard of it before, and it was fun. I did enjoy it, but
Tim, I would actually agree mostly with your analogy about the middle reliever player. I would see, but this is the kind of guy that you would see on the bench, but you couldn't take your eyes off him because he has a mohawk and a face tattoo. He might be among these other players that don't get a lot of time on the field, but you're going to notice this guy.
I don't know. I'm going to stick with mine that it's pretty solid middle of the road stuff. He's not something that stands out. I don't think that this movie is something that is going to go down in history as something that needs to be remembered. It's just a really good representation of a specific time frame in America and in filmmaking. It really is of its time period. It doesn't transcend it at all, really.
If you look online, you'll see it does have a cult following, yes.
Well, it's fascinating.
I'll let you know that actor's name is William Boyett, and he was best known for his work on Adam 12.
Wow. Okay. That's going back.
I used to love that show.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
One Adam 12. See the man.
Yeah.
How about can we talk about that minute when they brought in the flamethrower in the police station?
That was hilarious.
Yeah. I just took this off some dude in the street. I'm like, wow, could you be more obvious that this is going to be the thing that we use at the end of the film?
Well, yeah, right.
You know what Chekhov said? You know, if you take a flamethrower off a game banger, it's one, you gotta shoot somebody with it in act three. Yeah.
I believe I read that, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what was even better, though. You knew that was like foreshadowing it at its best right there, but I'm liking this, like you guys are talking about the stock characters. I totally love the stock black undercover cop in the sweats and everything, you know, the mm-hmm. cut off sleeves and just the whole garb. I think he had a fanny pack too, didn't he? I'm like,
there's
some beautiful 80s casting in there.
Yeah, exactly. Lovely. But wasn't he the one that had the flame, that caught the flame or pulled the flamethrower off the guy off the street? So,
can we talk about the black guy they kept calling Sanchez?
Yeah.
The guy that was clearly not of Latin descent at all. It was named Sanchez.
That's Richard Brooks was that actor.
I may be wrong about this, and I should have looked at the cast before we did the podcast, but the one cop was that Deep Throat from X-Files? Anyone who's watched it, I can't remember. It is him.
Which cop? Okay.
That time when... I don't know. I can't remember his name. I just call him Dale Cooper. When Cooper was at their residence, that awkwardness was really interesting. But man, that the editing on that was so poorly done, because it didn't set up. All of a sudden, he's like behaving as if he's super alien now. If there's not a single person on the planet that would look at his behavior and not be completely baffled by the way he's behaving. Whereas before, all throughout the film, he's behaving relatively like a normal human being would. But in that scene, all of a sudden, he's behaving really oddly and strangely and very much like an alien.
Well, he's drunk for the first time. And and they could have set that up a little better. And then probably you're right. If they you know, shot a few shots of him like drinking, you know, showing him drinking before they get to the point where he's drunk, that probably would have been clearer. But to me, I mean, I maybe because I've seen the movie several times, I mean, he's stone cold drunk in that scene. And that's why he's acting so bizarrely.
Oh, no, believe me. I got that. I understand that. But that's my point, is I guarantee you those scenes are on a floor somewhere because the editing is just really poorly done. It wasn't well constructed enough because, yeah, he clearly is drunk, but there's no setup to that. There's no lead in to that. It's just a cold open on the scene and he's plowed.
And I actually like the gags with the Alka-Seltzer and the aspirin.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Every time.
That was pretty funny stuff, yeah. There were a lot of character actors in that looked really familiar.
Oh, yeah, and that's what I loved about it. Like I said, it almost took me out of the movie, but it, only because we've seen him now, you know?
Right.
If I'd have seen the movie back then, I wouldn't have been saying, oh, hey, he was in, you know, whatever. But
and Chris Mulkey, the bank robber, is also now in Grimm playing the father of
Monroe, yeah.
Monroe, yeah.
That's the first thing I noticed. I'm like, hey, there's Monroe's dad. He's going to Vogue on us.
much younger.
But that Sanchez, the actor's name is Richard Brooks. He's been in Person of Interest, which is a show that I've recently started to enjoy. But he's been in a lot of bit roles since then too. So you know he plays stock characters quite a bit. NYPD Blue. He was in Firefly. He played Jubal Early. If you guys remember.
Jubal Early.
What?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh my God.
No kidding.
He was the precursor to basically is somewhat the same character in Serenity, in the movie Serenity. The guy who was sent by the guys with the blue hands to recover a river. I read commentary that it sort of is the same character and sort of isn't. But yeah, in the series, yeah, that's the character. Okay, all right. So, interesting.
Yeah, like I said, it's kind of neat to go back to that movie and see what they've done since. And it's like I said, almost took me out of the movie, but the storyline kept me in it enough. So what else you got for us, Tim? I know you got to have more to say.
I was indifferent to so much of this movie. I mean, it was not... It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It was just really solidly middle of the road. And like I said, it's a journeyman effort. It really is. It's not, I wouldn't say it's a greatly competent film. I would say it's just really adequate.
Well,
it's really hard to be, you know, have really strong opinions about it one way or the other, because I just feel like it's just really adequate. Well, I hate to keep reusing that same word, but I don't really think that there's much else in the way of a descriptor for it. I just feel it's really solid middle-of-the-road 80s work.
Well, I had fun watching it. I know that for sure. I mean, it was definitely a fun film. You know, it was worth watching.
No, I would never say it's not worth watching. I think it was, especially as an 80s time capsule, I really felt like I had kind of forgotten that these type of films were what we watched in the 80s to a large extent.
Yeah.
There were a lot of them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, this is probably your prototypical basic cable movie that you would have seen constantly in the 80s.
What was that movie that came out right about the same time period, I think, actually? Maybe I'm wrong. Alien Nation, that's it. That's what I'm thinking of. Wasn't that about the same time period?
Yes, and there were some similar themes going on there, too, and it was also a buddy cop movie.
Yeah.
And they turned it into a series as well.
Yeah, and I remember watching the TV series. Loved it. So
actually, Mandy Patinkin was in the movie.
Yep.
He played the alien.
Yep.
That was a much better film than this is.
Oh yeah,
that was way better.
it had more of a social commentary though on it.
Exactly. Well, it had more to say.
Yeah.
This doesn't really have it. It just wants to entertain you, and I think it did a decent job of that.
Well, I'll tell you guys, the next movie we're going to be doing this with, I have a feeling, you guys get ready for this one. This I don't know how to take it, but All Cheerleaders Die. That's the name of the next movie. It's available on demand right now, and
but they don't stay that way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the thing. And also the other tagline they have is "You can't kill their spirit." So I think we're gonna have fun with this one. From what I understand with this movie, it's not rated, so get ready for whatever, especially when cheerleaders are involved. But I have a funny feeling that this is going to be one that I don't think they're going to take it seriously as well. I mean, I think they're going to you know, make a decent film out of it, but I think they're also going to say, you know, you're watching a cheerleaders zombie movie. So, you know, who knows? But let me give you a little rundown. It says a rebel girl signs up a group of cheerleaders to help her take down the captain of her high school football team. But a supernatural turn of events thrusts the girls into a different battle. So, I can see the trailer now. It's going to say cheerleaders. Football captain. That's what they do in trailers. They don't have that in a world.
Anymore, in a world.
That, yeah, anymore it's that big sound effect thing. So, and the supernatural. So, I think that's how it's going to go. So,
I refer to that as the Transformers fart.
Yeah.
Transformers fart.
Well, that's a sad thing. That Michael Bay used that, and then all of a sudden it's in every freaking trailer now. Godzilla had it. I saw it on, I swear to gosh, I heard it on the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. I know I had to have heard it on there.
Oh, that can't be right.
Along with the Ooga Chaka song.
Film's way too classy.
I thought so too, but I swear I heard it. So,
hey,
it,
you know, that speaking of that film, would you be as excited for that film if it did not feature that classic rock?
I don't know. It's a good question. I'm thinking the other way around because of working at a radio station. Ever since that trailer's come out, that song has been hugely requested a lot lately. I think I was interested anyway, A, because it's a comic book movie, and I think the character Rocket Raccoon is just a hoot. Well, and Groot, you got to put them together. They're just great characters. I love those two characters. Always have. Every time I see them, that's the two I look for whenever they say Guardians. I have to look for those guys. But anyway, I think the classic rock, I think it's the other way around. It's brought the interest back to the classic rock song, those classic rock songs. There's another one they use in another trailer. I forget which one it is.
I guess you guys have seen the most recent trailer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to avoid, I've gone on media blackout on that one. I don't look for any new content because I don't want to see it. I'm already sold. Yeah. My ticket is bought. I am ready to see that film. You don't have to sell me on it any longer.
Well, this recent trailer they just released, Isaac and I sat there in front of the computer and watched it, and we both looked at each other. I cannot wait for that to come on.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, this latest trailer, you hear everyone speak, including Groot.
Yes.
And
Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, and Rocket, of course. It just the latest trailer is just awesome.
And the guy that plays Star-Lord, what's his name? Pratt? Chris Pratt? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, the more I see of him, the more of his delivery, the more I'm getting sold on this guy.
Exactly. So anyway,
see, now we're talking about how great this is, and yet we're still beating up on DC, who can't seem to get the most iconic of their characters.
Right. All right, guys. Before we go any further, I want to know how much do you look forward to watching all cheerleaders die?
My interest is.
I'm
interested.
Okay. So.
But I'll take it for the team.
There you go. That's a good cheerleader attitude. But I kind of had a feeling that's the way it's going to be, is that Eric and I would be like, hey, yeah, why not, you know? And then you two guys are like, yeah, okay.
Oh, man. I have a feeling it'll make for good podcasting, but I don't know if it's going to make for a good night of the movies.
We'll see. We got that coming up.
I mean, so. Tim Matson, you're a Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan, so certainly you could see the potential here.
Absolutely. And I have to say, the funny thing is, watching The Hidden last night, I watched it with both of my kids, and
which one was Tom Servo?
their reactions were fantastic, because they did not know how to take that film. They really did not. They didn't know how to react to it. They didn't know if it was being serious or if it was trying to be funny. It just didn't work for them at all. And I think you really have to have been alive in that time period to really appreciate that film, because it's not something that's going to connect with people who are not from the 80s.
Yeah. You had to know the guy that's going to be in a Ferrari dealership snorting coke off the desk of the general manager.
Yeah, well, it just the whole rhythm of the film and the way it's constructed, it just really did not speak to either one of them. They were both absolutely bored to tears by about three quarters of the way through it. And I thought that was kind of unusual.
That's,
you know,
amazing.
They both give a lot of things a fair shake. I mean, my son is a huge video gamer, and he loves to play Zork, which is a text-based adventure game.
Yeah.
So they're not above trying old stuff, but man, the movie, it just could not. It didn't connect with them at all, and the rhythm of it just was all wrong for them. They just were not having it.
You're gonna watch. Well,
have your kids ever seen like any of the prototypical '80s cop shows, like 48 Hours or Beverly Hills Cop, or Any of those type of films, or are they too young for those?
Really? No, they, it's funny you should mention that, that they've watched a lot of 80s films because, you know, I'm like Eric, I grew up in the 80s. I have a fondness for 80s stuff. So I've shown them a fair bit of material from the 80s, and they connect with a lot of the comedies and stuff, but I really haven't shown them much in the way of like Beverly Hills Cop or Lethal Weapon or anything like that.
All right. I'd be curious if young audiences can connect to those or not, but I just bought 48 Hours not long ago, and it's on my list to watch, and I'd actually kind of like to go back and watch Beverly Hills Cop too, because it's been decades since I watched any of those.
Yeah, I kind of would too. It's funny you should mention that. I actually purchased 48 Hours as well not too long ago. And so I am looking at revisiting that. And I would like to show them that and just see if it's just the cop format that they just didn't take to, or if it's just that that particular film.
Are you going to watch the cheerleader film with them?
I don't know. I'd have to check it out. I don't know that it would be something that would appeal to you. Neither one of them are really into horror films. Christian, in particular, is not a fan of horror films. Sam likes them, so maybe I'll watch it with Sam. And plus, I guess I mentioned this on Facebook. My son is actually on his way to Scotland right now, so he'll be in Scotland for 2 weeks.
Oh, that'll be kind of hard to do then.
Yeah, so it'll probably be me and Sam watching it.
Well, there's a couple of suggestions that down the road that I'd like to throw out there. One of them in the same spirit as the cheerleaders movie. I've seen the trailer several times, and it looks amazing. It's called Zombievers.
Oh, I my think gosh, Gil's, yes.
Oh, my
Gil, you've
God.
Seen that, haven't you,
yes.
the trailer?
Yeah.
I want to see this movie very, very badly. And, I mean, it is one of those self-consciously bad movies
right.
that I think is going to be more humor than horror. But I've seen the trailer, but I have heard nothing about it coming out on video or anything. Maybe it's already out.
Yeah.
I have to do a little research to find out. And the other one is I just picked up a movie from the 80s that I haven't seen in decades, but I remember liking, and it's called The Final Countdown with Kirk Douglas. Does anyone remember this?
Oh, yeah.
As long as you does not do the soundtrack, we're good.
Yeah, right, exactly. The premise is a aircraft fighter, modern day for, well, the 80s. There's some experiment, and like I said, I have vague recollections. I don't remember the exact storyline, but there's some experiment, and they wind up getting transported back to like the day before Pearl Harbor. And so there's this moral conundrum of, do they, you know, intervene? Do they change the course of history by using the tools at their disposal? But anyway, maybe that one we can add to our list for watching right. later down the road, too.
All right. Well,
what we ought to do is we ought to throw this open to any of our podcast listeners. If there's a film they'd like us to talk about.
Heck yeah.
Maybe they could send in some suggestions, and we could talk about their film.
Well, that brings us to a great way to close out the podcast. Let's give out our Twitter addresses one final time. I'll give mine. It's at Gil Wilson. You can also tweet at NerdUpPodcast. And, guys, give your Twitter addresses so like people can make suggestions to you as well.
And I'm at Eric Bill, ericbill.
I'm at Tim K. Has to Say.
And I'm pretty much everywhere as Tim Gone Mad. So you can find me on pretty much everything.
So if you got a suggestion for us, go ahead and tweet any one of us. We'll all get it somehow together, and we'll figure out. Maybe we'll watch one of your favorite movies, too, and find out what we think of your movies. I'll tell you what, it's a great place to stop. Let's end the podcast. I got some editing to do. I'm sure we got a weekend to get on with. I want to get out of the house anyway. So in closing, I'm Gil T. Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley.
I'm Tim Mattson.
I think we may have lost Tim Coker.
And that was Tim Coker.
Thanks for joining us anyway. So, let's go ahead and end the podcast. Join us again next time. We're going to have more nerdy things to say. And in the meantime, stay nerdy.
Nerd Up Podcast.
www.gilwilson.com.
If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.